You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Good Wednesday afternoon. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show. I am Braden Gall, not Paul Feinbaum. Sad to report. Honored to be here, though, of course, hanging out with you guys the week before SEC Media Day starts on Monday here in my fair city of Nashville, Tennessee. You can get to me on Twitter at Braden Gall, 855-242-7285. We'll have time for your phone calls, so anywhere you want to go, any of my takes that you think are terrible, I am honored if you want to take some time out of your day to give us a ring. Pete Sampson, good friend of the show, a guy I've known for a very long time here from The Athletic covering Notre Dame. Pete, welcome to the Paul Feinbaum Show. How are you, sir?
I'm great, man. It's good to be with you. It's been a while.
It has been a while. All right, I'm going to start with an easy one. Is Sam Hartman possibly the most underrated storyline in all of summer college football media commentary right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard for the Notre Dame quarterback to be underrated. But, I mean, I think you might be onto something there. Because I do think he's just sort of, like, overlooked. And, you know, the way Notre Dame's season went last year, they're sort of easy to, like, kind of put, you know, they're not at the head table right now, but man, you interject 113 touchdown passes and 13,000 passing yards into Notre Dame's off, like anybody's offense. And that's just going to change the way you play, the way your program looks. And I think Sam Hartman has a chance to make Notre Dame a legit playoff contender. I wouldn't say a national title contender, but like they've got a chance to make a run all the way and get in the Final Four because of him. I think he sort of makes so many things more dynamic, and this really should be Notre Dame's best quarterback. If not for Jimmy Clausen, then, you know, maybe Brady Quinn if things go really, really well. And I mean, at that point, we're talking almost, you know, 15, 20 years of quarterbacks who have come through here.
Just disrespecting. I will not stand for this Ian Book slander. I agree with you. I think he's a different level player. And worst case scenario, they are an incredibly important team with the playoff, even if they're not capable of getting to the playoff, because they're going to decide whether or not Clemson or Ohio State or USC get into the playoff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like with Hartman, it's like you haven't had – Notre Dame hasn't had a quarterback and that they were the reason they won the game, and I think Hartman is at that level of player. And it's like you get Ohio State early where they are super talented. I mean, more talented than Notre Dame, but new quarterback, first, like, road start of significance. That's could be a tricky spot. USC comes to Notre Dame. I think USC, obviously, you know, got Caleb Williams, but I don't think the rest of that roster is, like, you know, sort of top to bottom elite. You know, and then you go to Clemson. What are they? Are they sort of bubbling back up to where they were, or have they sort of leveled off a little bit where you can get them? You know, they'll be looking to pay back Notre Dame for last season for sure, but it's, yeah, Notre Dame can – they're going to have a say in who makes the playoff, whether they make it or not.
Pete Sampson joining us here, of course, from The Athletic covering Notre Dame. You can get to him at @PeteSampson_ on the Twitter machine. I am there as well, going down with the ship. It is I'm never going to leave. I'm never going to leave, Pete. I guess my question about Marcus Freeman and last year's team, and I think some of the reason why I think Sam Hartman's a bit undervalued is because Notre Dame is not a preseason top 10 team. And part of the reason they're not a preseason top 10 team is because they had two atrocious showings in mind-boggling upsets. But it happened early in the year. They kind of fixed some of that. But I think they were out of sight, out of mind for a lot of fans. And I think what we're going to learn is, was that just the first couple of months of Marcus Freeman being a head coach? Or are there actual signs of concern from those two games? Isn't that what we're going to learn this year about Marcus Freeman?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, this team is built to win. You know, they're old at the right spots, quarterback in particular. So, I mean, we will learn what Marcus Freeman learned. But also it's like, you were throwing out a first-time starter last year and then a quarterback who transferred to Arizona State who's, you know, 5'10 on a good day. I don't think people appreciate how poor Notre Dame was at quarterback last year. Even when Drew Pine or Tyler Buchner played well, they were just not good at that position, not good enough to be a national player. So Sam Hartman makes them good enough. So it's like, I think in some ways, like if you had Sam Hartman last year, Notre Dame would have probably cruised to 10-2. I mean, Marshall wouldn't have happened. Stanford wouldn't have happened. They would have had a puncher's chance at Ohio State. That was essentially a tie game at the end of three quarters. So I just think Marcus Freeman will be a better coach, and that's significant. But the quarterback improvement so much more significant than that. And I think that's why Notre Dame is sort of a sneaky playoff contender this year.
Tyler Buchner was kind of considered, you know, the heir apparent for a while there before he got into the lineup. It wasn't like this was just some walk-on that Notre Dame had to play. I think they were expecting big things of him when he got into the starting lineup. That certainly didn't happen. And then the injury, and certainly Tommy Rees now at Alabama with Tyler Buchner. What was Notre Dame fan – like, how did the fans – view losing Tommy Rees and Tyler Buchner?
I mean, two different reactions. I think with Rees, there was an understanding that, like, Nick Saban is the ultimate finishing school for college coaches, and if you have an opportunity to work for him, you go do that. I mean, Rees had been at Notre Dame, I believe, 8 of 13 years or 8 of 12 years. You count his playing days and coaching tenure, so it's not like he just sort of popped in and popped out. I think people appreciated, like, you were here for the long haul, good luck to you. I think Tyler Buchner, honestly, that was more confusing for Notre Dame fans, because they're like, well, wait a minute, Notre Dame went out and got Sam Hartman because they felt like Tyler Buchner wasn't good enough to lead them to the playoff or contend for the playoff, but now he's good enough to do that at Alabama. I think that, and it's like, you follow Bryce Young with a Buchner who has a negative TD to INT ratio. I think it just is bizarre. You're still banking on the potential of Tyler Buchner to take off in Alabama, and that could happen. I mean, when I talk to people who have, you know, plugged in with him, they feel like he's had a really good summer down there. But Alabama is not a sort of a patient place where you can grow and learn and, you know, just sort of make mistakes and come back from them. Like, that's cutthroat down there. And Tyler Buchner has yet to prove that he can thrive in that kind of environment. So it was more confusing for Notre Dame fans. Not that they were, like, bitter about it, but they're like, wait a minute, he's good enough to play at Alabama? But with Rees, I think it was more just gratitude. Thanks for your years of service here. Best of luck to you with Nick Saban.
Pete Sampson joining us here covering Notre Dame for The Athletic. Braden Gall in for Paul Feinbaum Show, ESPN Radio. And the reason Brian Kelly leaves to go to LSU is to recruit in a bigger pond to get national championship caliber athletes. That's just sort of the way it is. He had, you know, accomplished everything he probably could have possibly accomplished at Notre Dame. I guess the question is can anybody accomplish that next tier, that next step? And is that even a fair thing to ask of Marcus Freeman?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair thing to ask, and I don't know the answer. I think that the sort of the elephant in the room with Notre Dame is when your head coach, your all-time winningest head coach, says, you know what, I don't think I can win here, or I've got a much better chance to win somewhere else, and I'm going to uproot and reboot my career down there. If you're Notre Dame, that, like, has to give you pause about, like, wait a minute, like, are we the problem? Like, can we actually do this? And I do think the sport is moving further away from Notre Dame every year with NIL and the portal and sort of, you know, the freedom of movement type stuff. And that definitely gives Notre Dame fans pause about, like, wait a minute, is the sport passing us by as we speak? The way to stop that from happening is to recruit at a completely different level. And that was sort of what the expectation was for Marcus Freeman when he got here. I don't think that's happened yet. And that he's going to have to find a new gear in recruiting that I think he has in him, but I think it's more, maybe more of an operational, you know, do I have everyone in place that I need to recruit top five classes, not top 12 classes. But that's, I mean, Marcus Freeman was brought in because, or elevated because they felt like the recruiting upside there could get Notre Dame to a national championship level roster. But that is, that's probably still years away at this point in terms of how recruiting has been going.
Fascinating read. I recommend, of course, on The Athletic that you just put out about sort of the independent state of Notre Dame and why it works. As long as they've got a TV partner, that's that there's a mutually beneficial relationship there. And they're going to make a bunch of money, maybe not as much money in a few years as some of the Big Ten or SEC schools, but by and large, still an extraordinary contract for a single university. But to your point, that's great. That's fine. And they can always do that, and they can stay independent, and that's great. Why is it that all the new stuff you're talking about, NIL or, you know, whatever, why is that not something that Notre Dame is able to leverage? Like, to me, they should be – Nebraska, Notre Dame, like these are the schools that should be using it better than everybody else because of their brand power and because of their recruiting geography being the problem.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame is choosing not to do it that way. And when your AD and president co-author an op-ed in the New York Times sort of chastising NIL in its current form where it's pay for play and acquisition fees, I get this sort of like ivory tower sort of approach to that at Notre Dame, but you got to get in the sandbox with Alabama and Georgia and Miami and Oregon and A&M and Texas and all these other schools to get kids if you're going to try to win at all. And I think Notre Dame's sort of holding out hope that the federal government's going to solve NIL and we're going to get away from pay for play. Like, that's not happening. So if either you play the game like other people play it, or you sort of wave the white flag a little bit that you're not going to, you know, compete at the highest level, the highest level. Notre Dame can make the playoff as is. And when it expands, they'll make the playoff a lot. But, I mean, anyone who watched Georgia TCU last year knows what a national title roster looks like and what it takes to get there. And, it, you know, Notre Dame has not been willing to go all in on NIL because they sort of want to behave as if NIL is just, you know, market transactions and a true name, image, and likeness. And like, well, that's not how the game's being played right now. So either you play it the way it's being played, or you sort of put you're competing with one hand tied behind your back.
You've been around this program so long, Pete, and I've talked to so many fans that, and like, they'll just say out loud, we'd rather still be Notre Dame and do it our way and not win a national championship and take less money and take less this and take less that, and still be able to call ourselves Notre Dame, and we're fine like that. And I don't think there's any other fan base like that.
No, there's not. And I do feel like the number of fans like that sort of drops every year as the sport moves away from where Notre Dame is. And I do feel like, look, the Brian Kelly era was great because it reestablished that Notre Dame could be a 10-win program every year toward, you know, at the back half of that. And that felt good. But what's the next step for that? Because being an 11 or 12 win program every year, that's where Alabama and Georgia are. That's where Brian Kelly thinks LSU could be and where he thought Notre Dame couldn't. That's a different level of investment. And I don't think you need to have like water slides in your football facility or lazy rivers or anything like that. But in terms of NIL and coaching contracts, you got to play with the big boys there. And I think Notre Dame has sort of been kind of one foot in, one foot out. And like they're spending a ton of money on football. I don't want to sort of make it sound like Notre Dame is being cheap, but these other schools are just sort of willing to do whatever it takes. And I mean, Notre Dame's not going to, like, you're not going to have a series of stories that's happening at Georgia happen at Notre Dame. Like, that's just never going to happen. And I think that, you know, Notre Dame is – that's they want to preserve something of the student-athlete experience up here. But, yeah, it's just they're trying to compete with schools that almost are playing, I don't want to say by different rules, but certainly different levels of expectations and investment than what Notre Dame is going to go to.
It just means more in a very different way, Pete. Always a pleasure, my man. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much, buddy.
Anytime, Braden.
Yep, good to talk to you. Pete Sampson there from The Athletic. A lot of stuff to react to there. I'm telling you, there's a it's not self-defeating. It is just the way they prefer it. And no one in the SEC understands, in my opinion. And I think for good reason. 855-242-7285. 855-242-7285. Perfect playoff scenario. Players were excited to see all that and more. And Big 12 expansion. Is it coming? The commissioner's talking about it. We'll do that next. Braden Gall, Paul Feinbaum Show here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We're going to hear from Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark, who today at the podium at the start of talking season had some things to say about potentially expanding in the Big 12, and that the Big 12, he said earlier today, that is the deepest conference in college football. I found that to be quite interesting. Braden Gall in for Paul Feinbaum here on the Paul Feinbaum Show, ESPN Radio, 855-242-7285. Anywhere you want to go. Happy to hang out with you guys today, just days away from SEC Media Days, and of course today marking the start of talking season. We're going to hear from Mike Gundy in a second, but let's start with the Big 12 Commissioner, Brett Yormark, who said again today, who had the gall, I might even say, to say today on in front of media people and for the world to hear that the Big 12 is the deepest conference in college football. That is not true. It is not the deepest conference in college football. It is maybe the most balanced conference in college football. It might be the most unpredictable conference in college football. It might even be one of the most interesting conferences in college football. You pick a team, and it might be the best team in the Big 12 on any given year once Texas and Oklahoma leave. Could be TCU, could be Baylor, could be Oklahoma State, could be Kansas State. Hell, Kansas might be good now. Could be Texas Tech this year. There's so many good teams, UCF, BYU. It's all basically the same, but it's all basically Arkansas. Arkansas might be, if Arkansas moved back to the Big 12 right now, Arkansas might be the best program in the conference. In fact, I think it would be. So that's what they are. Doesn't mean they're not interesting. Doesn't mean they're not unpredictable and exciting and dramatic on a Saturday, but they're not the deepest conference in college football. The SEC is by far the deepest conference in college football. They have 3 national championship contenders and then like 7 teams that think they're going to win 9 or 10 games this year. It's the deepest I've ever seen the SEC, to be very honest with you. Here was Brett Yormark earlier today, though, talking about having a plan about the future of expansion for the Big 12.
Indicative of my opening comments today, open for business was that we were going to explore every and all possibility to grow revenue, to diversify our conference, and to do things that hadn't been done before. And we did a lot of that. Relative to expansion, I said coming out of our spring business meetings at the Greenbrier that we have a plan. And we have a plan for expansion. And I'm not going to really address it today. You can ask me, but I'm not really going to address it. We do have a plan, and hopefully we can execute that plan sooner than later. But as I've always said, I love the composition of this conference right now. The excitement the 4 new members have brought to this conference has been incredible. And if we stay at 12, we're perfectly fine with that. If the opportunity presents itself where there's something that creates value and aligns well with our goals and objectives, and starting with the board, then we're certainly going to pursue it.
What I find fascinating, that's Brett Yormark, Big 12 commissioner, today. That was today. What I find fascinating is that, like, conference expansion, like, gets quiet. No one talks about it. And then, like, it just happens. But like, what you need to understand is that Brett Yormark, the commissioner of the Big 12, is probably having a phone call every week about expansion. Whether it's trying to get Colorado or Arizona State or Utah to come, whether he's interested in UConn, which I don't think is a good decision. He thinks basketball is undervalued. I think it's valued properly. The TV ratings are up for basketball, but, like, it's still negligible when it comes to TV contracts. Gonzaga, okay, fine. That's interesting in a basketball-only sense because then you don't have to worry about splitting the football pie up, I guess. So what else could he be talking about? Are they going to take Tulane? Like, are they going to go Memphis, Boise State? Like, what else could he be talking about? Does SMU add value to them? The Pac-12 maybe wants SMU. I don't know. So I don't know what else he could be talking about. But clearly he's working on it, and clearly he's not done. And once Texas and Oklahoma leave, what's interesting is they do have some momentum. They are an interesting conference. They probably are the third best conference in college football moving forward at some point. I think they've certainly passed the Pac-12. They're not better than Florida State or Clemson. And if Miami is great, North Carolina is good, the ACC is better. But it's a basketball conference, whereas the Big 12 has got football fans built around a football state with football programs. Baylor, TCU, Texas Tech, Houston, UCF in Florida. Iowa State has really underrated fans. BYU is a football brand. West Virginia has had multiple eras of high-quality football. Cincinnati, football. Not a bad basketball program, but football, at least now. Kansas State, 30 years of pretty good football, pretty good fan base, pretty good attendance. It's a league built on football, and that's a little bit different than the Pac-12, which is built with a bunch of fans who care about so many things other than football. The ACC is fans that care deeply about basketball. And the Big 12 might even be the best basketball conference. But they at least are built, their future is stable because they are built around quality football fan bases. Not elite fan bases, but good ones. Again, like Arkansas. Arkansas would be the best program in the new Big 12. Better fans, more money, bigger stadium, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Arkansas would be the best. Texas A&M would be the best. Like, it's, you see what I'm saying? I'm not saying they're great. I'm saying it's good. But it's better than Wake Forest and Boston College and Virginia and a lot of these fan bases that just don't sell tickets. They don't love football. At least the Big 12 loves football. So we'll see what he's talking about. We'll see where he's going. We'll hear from Mike Gundy and take your phone calls. We've got some calls. 855-242-7285. We'll do that next. My name is Braden Gall. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
855-242-7285. Braden Gall in for Paul Feinbaum here on a Wednesday before media days. Talking season has begun. We head to your calls. Elliot in Ohio. Elliot, welcome to the Paul Feinbaum Show. How are you?
Braden, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I'm really stoked for the Big 12 this year. I got season tickets to see Cincinnati. And I'm wondering if you think they can take down Colorado, if they can continue what Luke Fickell started.
Interesting question, Elliot. I think you can absolutely beat Colorado. I think Deion Sanders is going to be good for them in the years that he is there. So if that's 3 years or 5 years, I think that he's going to do good things for them. But I think they're a bad football team right now. I don't think they are good enough to be relevant right now. I think by the end of the year, maybe they're better. So I think that's absolutely a win. Now, My question about Cincinnati is really – you lose Luke Fickell, and you've replaced coaches for 20 years now, right? Like Mark D'Antonio, Butch Jones, Brian Kelly. You know, you can go down the list of very good coaches that have gone through Cincinnati, and they've found ways to find the next guy, Luke Fickell. I don't know if Scott Satterfield is the next guy. I just don't know. He basically kind of got out ahead of the pitchforks and torches in Louisville, and I think he's a good coach, but I just think he's a guy. I don't know. I need to see it. But I do think Cincinnati's well equipped with recruiting under Luke Fickell to go into the Big 12 and be mildly competitive, I think. I don't think they're going to win a ton of games, but I think they're going to be competitive. So that would be my Cincinnati spiel, Elliot.
Yeah, I think so. I think if they get lucky this year, they win a few games, they keep the momentum going, and he might have a chance to build a program.
Yep, there you go. Thank you, Elliot. I appreciate it. I look, every single time a team has jumped – like Missouri, jumping to the SEC is kind of different because they've always taken very established programs. Like Utah going up to the Pac-12 is a huge step up. TCU going up from the Mountain West to the Big 12 is a big step up. Louisville going from the Big East, you know, Conference USA to the Big East to the ACC is a big step up. It's absolutely a step up to go from the Big 12 to the SEC, but it's not the same as going from Group of Five to Power Five. So, and Missouri had the greatest coach in basically school history in Gary Pinkle when they jumped into the SEC, and they jumped in when the SEC East was very down, and they took advantage of that. A&M, of course, came in with Manziel, took advantage of that, and then we've seen how hard it is to sustain that. We've seen how hard it is. It took Utah years under Kyle Whittingham to get back to winning at the highest level. Took TCU multiple they had to change Gary Patterson to get back to the level. I think there's an adjustment period. It takes time to go from the G5 to the P5. It just takes time. So I think Cincinnati, UCF, Houston. BYU is a little different because they're a bunch of, like, grown men with families and wives and children, you know. They're all, like, 25. So I think they play a pretty tough non-conference. Like, their independent schedule has been very difficult year after year after year. So I think they're more equipped to handle the rigors of a Power 5 schedule. I have doubts about Houston and Cincinnati and UCF coming in and finding success right away. UCF might be the best of them this year, but you're going to have – it takes time. It takes 3-4 years. You got to start recruiting at a different level. You got to figure out how to compete at that level every single week, week in and week out. That's the difference between Power 5 football and Group of 5 football is line of scrimmage, trench warfare, every single Saturday, 60 minutes. Bring it. It's just harder. Andy in Arkansas. Andy, welcome to the Paul Feinbaum Show. How are you, man?
Hey, thank you, Braden. I'm a little concerned about Arkansas when this all takes place. I mean, they struggle to handle Missouri on an annual basis. Texas A&M, same thing. And now we got Texas and Oklahoma coming in. Where do you see, in your opinion, do you see Arkansas in a more of a diminished role, maybe taking a back seat? I just they've struggled for so long, and now Missouri's got their number. I'd love to hear what you have to say about that. I'm talking in football, obviously.
Sure, so. Sure. Thank you, Andy, for the call. I appreciate it.
You bet.
I find this topic to be utterly fascinating and far more complex than I think people realize, because I think there's total logic and it makes perfect sense for fans to think about a program like Arkansas and say, all right, if Arkansas is the eighth best program in the SEC. Let's just call it the eighth best program. There's seven of them that have, you know, there's six that have won national championships, plus A&M, who has A&M sort of walks, talks, and acts and spends money like a national champion, just hasn't ever actually won it. But they're basically in the with the resources they have and the recruiting base they have, they are in that top half, the haves and the have-nots in the SEC in terms of like competing for national championships post-integration. I think A&M's in that group. Arkansas and South Carolina are sort of the border. They're sort of the line, right? Like their programs ranked 8 or 9. So in the SEC, does it get tougher? Of course it does. You're adding Texas and Oklahoma. That's common sense. That's logical. That's practical. But here's what I would say to Kentucky fan, to Mississippi State fan, to Ole Miss fan, to South Carolina fan, to Arkansas fan. Teams that are not consistently recruiting, you know, elite recruits like A&M and Alabama and LSU and are not winning national championships in the last 50 years, but still have great fans and tons of money and lots of resources. Arkansas's spot in the hierarchy in college football doesn't really change. It may go down a couple spots in the SEC. The schedule may get tougher. But if you are ranking every program in college football, Arkansas is probably a fringe top 25 program. All time. They're probably, you know, wherever you may like them, they might be 22 or 25 or 27, somewhere in there. But that number doesn't change. They don't actually move. And in fact, the stability of the SEC, the resources of the SEC, eventually you might start moving them up a notch. Like, West Virginia has competed at a higher level than Arkansas in the modern era. They were one game away from the national title in 2007, and they were in the national championship game with Major Harris and Don Nealon in 89. Arkansas hasn't come close to that of what West Virginia's done. But because West Virginia is not inside the Big Two in the SEC and in the Big Ten, I would say Arkansas has jumped way past West Virginia in terms of national standing. Like right, Oklahoma State's another good example. Oklahoma State has accomplished far more than Arkansas in the last 25 years. Some of that's the conference they play in. I get it. That's not my argument. What I'm saying is that they both could have been ranked number 25, let's say, in the national rankings, best programs in college football overall. And because it's the Big 12, because they're losing Texas and Oklahoma, and because Arkansas is getting Texas and Oklahoma, I could actually make the case that Arkansas is moving up a step and has jumped Oklahoma State. Or, you know, like Wisconsin would be the same thing, right? Like Wisconsin and Arkansas, I think, are very similar. Let's say they're both ranked 24 and 25 in the nation. Well, the fact that they're in the Big Ten and the SEC, they don't fall. They are never going to fall. They've got the stability and the money to be there forever. And I find that dynamic interesting with SEC schools. Like, it is going to be harder for Ole Miss and Mississippi State and Arkansas and South Carolina to compete and win a championship. But here's the last point, the saving grace in all of this. 12-team playoff. To be great at Arkansas and South Carolina and Ole Miss and Mississippi State and Missouri and Kentucky, you do not need to go 12-0 like Georgia or Alabama. You just need to have that great 2010 season with Ryan Mallett when you had 10 wins. Or Ole Miss, 10 wins with Matt Corral. Or Will Levis, 10 wins with Kentucky. All you need is that 10-win season. Dak Prescott at Mississippi State. Connor Shaw at South Carolina. Those teams get into a 12-team playoff. Maybe you pull an upset. Maybe you win a game. That's what you're playing for. Arkansas maybe more than some of these other teams because they've got bigger fan base, bigger boosters, bigger dollars, but like not by much. And if Notre Dame can't ever win a national championship, I'm not sure how Arkansas will. But I think getting into the playoff for Arkansas and those kind of programs is absolutely attainable. You go 10-2 at Arkansas with the right coach and the right guy, you're in the playoffs. If you go 9-3 and your losses are to like number one Georgia and number two Alabama, you don't think a committee's going to look at that favorably? I think they do. But that's what you're playing, is to hang Final Four banners, not championship banners. You're trying to hang playoff banners. How many years have we made the playoff? That is the thing that you're trying to accomplish now for 90% of college football. The top 10% want to win the Natty. Everybody else wants to get into the playoff. And I'm okay with that, objectively. I think 10-win seasons for Arkansas is great. You know, same thing for Kentucky, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, South Carolina, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. More of your calls, 855-242-7285. My name is Braden Gall. This is the Paul Finebaum Show on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Paul Finebaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Finebaum Show podcast. The Paul Finebaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.